the teachings that are offered in the texts that we receive, the teachings of the Buddha, they encourage us to do some, I mean, there's a lot of them. There's books and books of them, but we can kind of really simplify. You know, there's teachings about what we do, and then there's teachings about, as I said the other day, what might be recognized or what might be seen. And I think, you know, the Buddha really pointed us first and foremost. Foremost, he pointed to a particular perspective that is useful to bring to our experience, that we're not exploring our experience to get rid of something or to hold on to something, but more to understand what is happening in our minds that leads us to suffering and what might happen in our minds that would lead us in a different direction. And one of the primary tools for that, cultivating that perspective, is the tool of mindfulness. It's what we've been spending our week doing, is really cultivating this capacity for mindfulness. And I think it was really a very brilliant thing of the Buddha, because this capacity that we have for mindfulness is an ordinary capacity of mind. And the Buddha really highlighted and said, this is a really important quality. We need to cultivate this to a very strong degree. And so while it's an ordinary capacity of mind, our habitual way of having that in our lives is not to particularly recognize it or see it as a valuable property or valuable function of our experience. And so that's one thing the Buddha highlighted, is mindfulness. This is helpful. Explore this, cultivating this quality. And then he began with mindfulness. As we begin to stabilize that mindfulness, he began pointing to a couple of things. In particular, we talked earlier in the week about noticing how experience conditions other experience. So we start to see that when we see something or hear something, there's ideas that arise about that in our mind, and often it's from those ideas arises some kind of response or reaction. More often than we think, actually, what happens in our mind, the way our minds are conditioned, is not so much from a direct experience, although that can happen. For instance, you know, that when we reach out to touch something and it's hot, you know, it's we don't actually have to form a concept that's hot before our system begins to withdraw from that. It's a very quick kind of thing. But much of the time, our responses, the way our experience conditions itself, is not so much through the direct experience, like hearing a sound, hearing a siren in the distance. You know, that sound itself is a sound, and then our mind creates a concept around it, you know, what that siren means. And then we respond to that meaning more than directly to the sound. And so we start to see this conditioning process at work. And again, the Buddha points us to notice the way things are conditioned. He highlights this over and over again. He says, a feeling conditions a movement towards liking and not liking. Notice that. So over and over again, he's pointing us to noticing the conditioning. And this has some impact, that we begin to see that things are unfolding, not simply randomly, but that there are conditions at play. And some of those conditions at play will lead us right down the garden path of struggle and stress and suffering. And some of those conditions at play can lead us in a different direction. And as our minds begin to understand that it's conditions, and that there's a kind of, our system responds to those conditions through choice, our minds begin to make choices that are more in line with well-being, more in line with moving in the direction of non-suffering. And so this conditioned nature of experience is one perspective that the Buddha says we can cultivate or can be cultivated and is useful to recognize. Again, more what we're doing is cultivating the capacity for the stability of mindfulness, and then having a teaching that says, and as you're noticing what's arising in your experience, you might begin to notice the conditioned nature of experience, and that's useful. So being told that it's useful can begin to encourage the mind to take it up and notice it. If we weren't told it was useful, it might just kind of stay under the surface of our conscious awareness. We might not actually, it might not come into consciousness. Another perspective that I brought in this morning is a perspective of impermanence. This is also a perspective the Buddha really encouraged us to explore, or to recognize that it's happening at a level way more rapid than we can possibly imagine much of the time. So again, the encouragement is to recognize that experience arises and ceases, and then another experience arises and ceases. And sometimes we're noticing that things are arising. Sometimes we're noticing that things are ending. Sometimes we notice that attention kind of picks up on the middle of something, and then it picks up on the middle of something else. So there's different ways we can notice this change. Sometimes we actually notice a particular experience come into being, have a life, and then fade. Like the sound of that car. It approaches, we hear it, the sound strengthens, and then it fades. So sometimes the attention kind of picks up on a particular experience. That might be a body sensation, too, that we may experience a kind of a wave of some experience that comes through and then ceases. So through that process, we're noticing the change of that experience. Or we might see that our attention is shifting from experience to experience. So we hear a sound, and then before we notice the ending of that sound, our attention has moved to another experience. And so we haven't actually noticed that the sound that we were listening to before had an ending or was impermanent, but we may begin to recognize that our attention doesn't stay anywhere for very long, and that too is an aspect of change. So there's different ways to see, that we see change happening. And part of the benefit of seeing change, again, the value of seeing change, is that, well, first of all, it is actually our experience, what we experience, is a changing flow. Every now and then, we can kind of notice that experience is a changing flow. And sometimes what we notice actually, though, is when it feels like, I don't notice that things are changing. It feels like things have stopped. Or it feels like that is solid. That sensation, that thing, that feels like it's stable, it's there. And what the Buddha encourages, or what a teaching around impermanence might encourage us to do there is to notice what we think to be solid and be attentive to it. Oh, that thing, that pain in my knee, that's really solid. It feels like a block. It's one thing. And if we can be curious about it instead of averse to it and reactive to it, because the aversion creates a little bit of a separation from the actual experience and also has us often relating to the experience through an idea rather than the actual experience. But when we can actually come into, without aversion, the actual touch into the actual sensation of that knee, we find that even that solid thing that we took to be so solid is very lively. It's like we can't really pin down where the pain is, because you kind of explore that, and suddenly you see, oh, it's shifted. oh, it was there, but now it's here. And so we start to see that that sensation is more of a dance of sensations. It's not one solid thing. And pretty much anything that we're taking to be solid or stable, if we start to explore with this perspective of just receptive, allowing, non-judgmental. So we have to be in this perspective of allowing attention, I think, to really do this kind of exploration. And curiosity rather than judgment or fear. But if we have that perspective, that allowing perspective, what we will see is that our experience is changing. And that understanding that experience changes at a very fundamental level helps to undermine the way that we cling, the way that we think we're going to find happiness. Because typically our minds kind of impute happiness or believe that we'll find happiness by being able to land on something and hold it, to figure out how do I get this thing and keep it, whether it's a thing in the world, some material thing, or whether it's having somebody look at us or see us in a particular way, you know, have somebody have a particular view about us. And we may recognize that we can't necessarily get and hold on to any one thing forever. But there is a way that we think that what happiness is getting something, having it, and then before that thing goes away, that we've got something else in place that we have, so that we have the next moment of happiness. And then before that one goes away, we've got the next thing. So it's like we're trying to construct a world in which the having is our where we find happiness. The having is where we take for happiness has to do with this mode of getting something and holding on to it for a time. And as that falls apart, to find the next thing to hold on to for a time. What the understanding of impermanence shows us is that that project is actually, it's fairly doomed, that we are not going to succeed in that project ultimately. And that it's not our fault when that plan, that kind of agenda doesn't work. We haven't done something wrong. The world isn't like, you know, somehow betraying us. It is the nature of experience to pass away. And so really deeply understanding this impermanent nature of experience begins to weaken our belief that holding on to things and doing this project of getting the next thing for happiness is a way to happiness or well-being. We begin to understand it at a very deep level that actually trying to hold on, that movement to say, okay, this thing, I'm going to have this for a while, embedded in that very project is tension and stress. And when our system begins to see that, again, it kind of begins to orient towards that is not well-being in the moment. It begins to explore a different way to releasing that craving, that holding, that aversion. Because this project also includes not only trying to hold on to something pleasant, but the project of controlling the world to keep unpleasantness at bay. So we begin to see the futility of that project. And fortunately, through this practice, also begin to see, this can be a place of needing some trust in the practice, because there are stretches of time as we begin to see the futility of that project that it can just feel like, well, where can happiness be found if not in having things? And there can be a sense of like loss or a feeling of you know, wishing that you didn't know that this was stressful for the system to try to hold on to things. And so the mind kind of can go through that place, and it may take some faith or some trust to keep going there. Although we do see that if we kind of let go of the project of being attentive, we end up suffering more. And we understand that it is suffering and feel that suffering more clearly. And so it's almost like we have no choice but to continue. And yet, as we continue, we see that the mind that lets go, and I've heard descriptions of this week, that when the mind lets go of some kind of orientation towards, it's got to be like this, there's no other way to happiness. When the mind sees that, sees the belief with that, or recognizes a belief that may not have any real basis in reality, you know, maybe that belief falls away, and a completely different kind of happiness comes to us. It's not the happiness of having something. It's a different kind of happiness. It's a fundamentally different kind of happiness that results from the mind releasing the need to have things be a certain way according to I or me, what I want, what I feel like I need. That's more of a kind of an alignment with this is what's happening. This is what's happening. And so the what we begin to see as our mindfulness stabilizes is not only the experiences that happen, but also some of these perspectives of conditionality and of impermanence. And those understandings begin to really orient the mind in a new direction, towards a different kind of happiness that's not, it's more about letting go, it's more about peace, it's more about ease and calm. And those experiences, one teacher says, we have to acquire a taste for calm and for peace sometimes, because sometimes our system, you know, in our normal way of kind of having been conditioned in this world, our system kind of wants to go for the highs and the lows and, you know, the peace, you know, it's like we've got to acquire a taste for that peace and begin to recognize, oh yeah, whew, this calm. There's a different way the system can settle and be, and wow, actually, this has a different kind of delight to it, a different kind of happiness to it.